guy. That's the masses. Welcome back to another episode of Give Me Some Truth. Mitch and I are in the booth today, talking about kind of all things custodial. We'll define what that means. But we are getting close to the Easter holiday. Mitch, favorite Easter food?
Well, I can tell you the worst Easter food are peeps.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Those are just awful and I don't understand it.
Okay. But do you like other Easter type candy, just not peeps, or?
The Easter candy that I will be buying, haven't bought it yet.
Okay.
But I will be buying the Reese's Easter egg.
Oh, the eggs.
Because they're just better than the normal ones for some reason.
Are they really?
Yeah, I don't know why. Interesting. I don't know if it's something of the fact that, like, oh, you're excited, it's a holiday, it comes out once a year.
Sure.
You know, the novelty of it. Just like I would say the Reese's Christmas tree peanut butter cup is better than your everyday peanut butter cup.
How about those crazy Cadbury eggs that they've been putting on us for the last 100 years and expecting us to eat? Those are weird,
I'll pass.
Right?
I'll pass on those.
What I do respect about that, though, is that Cadbury is sticking with the advertisement, the television advertisement from like 30 years ago. They just roll it every year with like the lion and the, I love that. That's fantastic to me. Hey. Like just, it worked 30 years ago. Keep rolling.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that a lot.
I know I answered the question in more of the candy side of the world. And I actually don't eat that much candy, but were you asking the question more so on like special dinner or meal, or were you asking more, what's the favorite on the candy side?
It's an interesting question because the whole idea of kind of Easter food is unique because it's not as well defined as other holidays, right? So,
like Thanksgiving, turkey, Christmas, ham, maybe, you know, that sort of stuff.
Right.
Easter's a little different.
Right. So is there something that stands out too? Because you're getting into spring, right? So like you kind of get like some asparagus things or peas or, you know, kind of has that spring feel to it.
Well, we do a bunny brunch.
Okay.
So I associate brunch more with Easter than I would any other holiday. Maybe even Mother's Day. I don't know. Mother's Day is a brunch day too, but.
Okay. Sure. Yeah.
You ever done a bunny brunch on Easter?
I've never done that. Yeah. But when I was growing up with the extended family, there were definitely kind of larger family brunches where, you know, 15 of us would all go to somewhere on Mother's Day or on, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And yeah.
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 So for some reason, the spring-ish holidays, brunch is involved. Because like none of the holidays the rest of the year really do brunch, do they? Am I missing something?
No.
It seems like it's kind of Easter and Mother's Day.
Right. I don't even know, like Father's Day, I don't know that you necessarily have that. No, it's an interesting too, both, like you said, both springtime.
Yeah. Yeah.
Holidays. Yeah. So go figure.
Yeah. I could always talk about food. I mean, this
right,
is a good topic.
Right. I mean, I'm a big
fan. Why don't just completely, you know, rip off the title and.
And just roll with like a culinary type.
Yeah.
Have conversations about, you know, the different holiday feasts and whatnot.
Right.
Might not be a bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah. We will get to brokerage at some point here, I think, but.
Right. The last thing I was going to say on that is I've always been a sucker for jelly beans for whatever reason. Yeah, big fan of jelly beans. But like original Brock's. Don't bring that Starburst crap. No, just Brock's original, right? Mm. And then I was trying to find them and I'm like, oh, I'm sure Amazon has them. Yep. Year round, doesn't matter. So then I ordered some, right? Yeah. So I was like, oh, it's going to be great. I'm going to get some jelly beans.
Right? Yeah.
This was like 6 months ago. And I didn't realize that it was, I think I did realize that it was like two bags, it was like a two pack, but I was like, whatever, I don't care. It was fine, whatever. Yep. What I didn't realize is that the bags were 3.5 pounds each.
Oh, okay.
So 7 pounds of jelly beans showed up at my house.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's Amazon.
Yeah.
That sounds more of a Costco purchase.
No, I looked at Woodman's, because, you know, I mean, Woodman's is like Costco, right? They have everything.
Yeah.
No, it didn't have them. I mean, again, they had kind of the weird, like, non-Brock's. No, I wanted the original ones. And so, yeah, no, couldn't find them.
Okay.
So I went to Amazon. Go jelly figure, beans. Right? Well, right.
I don't know if I knew that about you.
Look at that.
Put us in the booth and we're learning stuff about each other. Yeah.
It is true. But I'm not like you. I'm not a big fan of the peanut butter desserts.
Ooh.
which my wife is, you know, huge, huge peanut butter fan.
Yeah.
Huge peanut butter fan. So if it involves peanut butter, she's down. I'm just not as much.
Yeah. Oh, so this is a funny story. 2 years ago, maybe we'll call it, I went over to the one and only Clint Walkner's for a lunch or dinner or something.
Sure.
And it was with the kids involved, so the families, and Clint had the food or the main meal taken care of. I asked, what can I bring? And he's like, how about some dessert? Great.
Okay.
And I found a recipe online for a homemade massive peanut butter cup.
Oh boy.
But the inside wasn't just your standard, like Valencia. Is that the peanut? Valencia peanut? It was a hazelnut peanut butter. And so I'm like, ooh, you know, this might be different. It might be special. All that. And I'm like, yep, I'm going to do it. Peanut butter cups are great. Hazelnut peanut butter cups should be good too.
Seems fine. Sure. Right? Right.
But then the issue is, and I've never had to do this before, when you shop for hazelnuts, ideally you want all the skin off because that eliminates a step.
Okay.
And I went to 3 different stores, I want to say it was, none of them had the skin off. So then you have to, then I'm Googling how to get skin off of these nuts. And there's some kind of like, is it blanching? Is that the word? Blanching process, right?
Yep.
And I tried that. Way too labor intensive. So I did a 20% effort.
Sure.
And the skins are where all the bitterness is, apparently. So the skins are left in the peanut butter. Boy. This is getting into a long story, it turns out. I'll try to keep it short. From there, I made the hazelnut peanut butter in the middle, we'll call it, and got the nice dish to make the big peanut butter cup. And Hadley Walkner was not a fan.
Called you out.
It was so funny. Everyone else, Clint and Courtney, like, oh, yeah, it's different. Yeah, you know. And Hadley just comes out and's like, Dad, I don't like this. We're all saying, we're like, I get it, Hadley. I get it. Like, touche. It was not the best effort. And
you figure out the bitterness in this? Like, when you were eating it, obviously.
When you're eating it. Because I didn't try it. Like, you come up and it's, the packaged Reese's peanut butter cup, it you know, a couple of them can fit in the palm of your hands, you know. This thing was, you know, like bigger than my face.
Oh, man.
You know, because it was like big one. So then we sliced them into like a pie. I'm like, you slice it into pieces of pie.
I mean, kudos for you for trying.
Hazelnut peanut butter cup. So I wish, I'm going to have to ask Clint about this, like what Hadley's exact words were, because it was hilarious.
God, that's awesome. That's the beauty of like little kids.
Yeah.
They'll just like, honesty, here it comes, like it or not.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, it's great. So anyways.
We digress.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about this. So we'll give a kind of a 101 on just custodians and what this means, right?
Yeah. Good place to start.
Probably the easiest way to describe a custodian is the institution that not only holds the assets, right? They create the account, they hold the assets, they create the statements, they create the tax documents. They're kind of the gatekeeper in our world between kind of us and the actual client assets, right? Is that a fair way to say it?
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
They being the custodians, have relationships with the actual exchanges themselves so that we can place trades and we can do it in an efficient manner, mm-hmm. right? It's probably the easiest way of saying it.
Yep.
If you invest on your own, you are likely still using a custodian, but you are using it in a slightly different fashion than how we use a custodian.
Yeah, and that's important to discuss a little bit too, because financial advisors like us, and in this case, we're independent, right? We're an independent registered investment advisor, but we still use Schwab in, you know, 99% of the...
We wouldn't have to.
No, but we do.
Right.
Right. So client assets are held at Schwab, and then we route trades essentially through their brokerage platform for advisors. So on that side, they call it the institutional side of the world. Schwab also has a retail. We call it the retail side of the world. And that's more for a do-it-yourselfer.
Direct to the investor.
Yep. So that's, you know, if someone wants to do all their own trading, they don't want an advisor to do that for them. And maybe they don't need or want or desire financial planning, right? They're doing trades on their own And there's many different places to do that, whether it's something like a Schwab. And there's other names that I'll sprinkle up throughout this conversation, I think, as we talk about some of the things to be aware of and to look for in a brokerage or a custodian. But there is kind of a difference between the institutional side, that's where you're working with an advisor, versus the retail, which is more on the do-it-yourself side.
And I think that the reason why we're doing an entire podcast on this topic, well, that and the Easter conversation. I thought it was good.
Yeah.
This is one of those things in life where you don't think that it matters until it matters, and then it really matters, right? In other words, if you're just going along and investing and you don't think about your custodian and there's no problems, then okay, no issue. But if you start to run into problems, these can be costly and these can be frustrating and these can be time-consuming problems to be able to solve.
And some of these problems might be related to taxes, right? So taxes could be one part of it. Some of it might be related to liquidity. By liquidity, meaning your access to your cash, right? Yep. If you decide to actually press sell on something and, you know, you want the cash from it. So those are two of the big ones that come to mind, right?
Cost.
Yep. Cost is another one. Yep. Sometimes you might not be aware of, I'll say, other fees, right? So it might be straightforward of, oh, there's, you know, $0 trading, which is like most places now, right? $0 transaction cost, but other costs may arise.
Not only that, you could get yourself into a spot where you didn't realize that what you were doing, because you don't do it often enough, seemed somewhat benign and ends up being very expensive, i.e. you need to send 3 wires in a year. Mm-hmm. Well, they might charge you $50 a wire. All of a sudden you go, hold on, well, this was expensive.
Right.
Where the next custodian might not charge any. Mm-hmm. The next custodian might even be more expensive to do something like wires.
Right.
The one that was at zero for wires might be more expensive in another area. Mm-hmm. You might not even have noticed that because you don't use that. Yep. Trading options, for example. Right. Yep. So I think that the message today is they come in all different flavors and styles. So obviously make sure that you're working with a custodian that fits your need the best. So let's unpack this a little bit. If you're if you're a client and you're working with an advisor, you may not have choice in your custodian because the advisor likely already has a relationship with a custodian or potentially multiple custodians, right?
And we mentioned Schwab, others are Fidelity.
Yes.
Pershing. Pershing. You formerly might remember TD Ameritrade, which is Schwab now. So there are some other names out there for sure.
Yeah. So let's take a step back quickly on that one as well. Schwab and TD Ameritrade used to be independent companies, both competing in the custodial world. Schwab was quite a bit bigger than TD and then ended up buying TD, kind of a normal kind of consolidation, if you will, within an industry. Think of it similar to if you had two banks and one simply bought the other one. Happens, you know, and so this is kind of a similar thing that happened, although they were both very large within the custodial space, so it was a massive merger in regard to two big companies coming together, but again, not unprecedented. Two large banks have come together before and you know, operate as one, and so that's kind of where we're at right now with the Schwab TD merger.
Now TD is implemented, because 3-4 years ago, we wrote about this when it was first announced, and then it's been an integration. And now, you if you hire a financial advisor, right, your assets will not be at TD Ameritrade because that doesn't exist anymore. Your assets, if they had that TD Ameritrade relationship, would be Schwab. So,
And so, again, why does this matter? It matters because these custodians can offer services, but they can also kind of charge for those services. And just understanding how it works, I think, is really the key to it. So if you're working with an advisor, the reason why the custodian matters is it's where your money sits. It's the security of your money. Most people tend to gravitate toward bigger custodians because they like the idea of size and stability. That also can lead to lower costs because of scalability and their ability to efficient than maybe smaller custodians. Doesn't always mean that bigger is better, but in a lot of ways it could. I think where people get themselves into problems is when they're dealing with more esoteric situations And it again, can become expensive when it doesn't, when you don't realize it's becoming expensive.
Right, right. And sometimes, depends on how active of a trader you are too, or how active you need to send money to and from places via wire. A lot of it depends on the activity level, I'll say. I mean, if you're an options trader and day trading and doing all this, like nowadays, you shouldn't really expect to have a transaction fee, right? That's going to be an important variable when it comes to trading. Because 20, 30 years ago when E-Trade came onto the scene, it was revolutionary at how low of a cost they were charging at the time. I mean, was it $4.95 or?
I believe so. Yeah, that was
versus industry standard was much higher than that at the time. And then eventually that kind of went to zero. And you know, these places still make money on trading, right? It's just it's not that transaction cost that's directly passed to you for every trade. So,
which has been a great benefit to the end user, to the end investor. Yep. Is that these custodians have kind of gotten into a price war down to zero, which has been great for the end consumer.
Yeah.
Really,
usually that was just stocks primarily, but now a lot of that has even flowed to a lot of these places have no transaction fee lists, which basically means, this applies to most ETFs, which is exchange traded funds. It can apply to mutual funds. Yep. That's another thing to look out for actually is if you're making a redemption of a mutual fund, there could be redemption fees, right? But sometimes people don't realize there's no trading cost on my stocks, but there is 25 or 50 bucks maybe, you know, to redeem a mutual fund. Right. So that can come into play certainly. So there's lots of different levels to that. Like when we just say trade, like, well, what are we trading? Are we trading options contracts?
Right.
You know, then the going rate for options might be, I think 65 cents seems to be, you know, kind of one of those numbers as an industry norm for options or futures. Like, we don't deal with that a lot on our side.
But some traders do.
But those people are definitely out there.
Yeah. So, again, why is it important? It's important because when people ask questions like, how did the Bernie Madoff situation happen, right? So I think one area that we can kind of point to is that as an independent firm, at least as well as we know kind of what happened there, he did not have a custodian involved. Right? And so custodying your own assets within your firm.
Oh, sure it was. It was just the floor below where he sat, right?
Exactly.
Wasn't it like
It was
the floor with no windows, the blinds were down. And, you know, for the, I'm air quoting right now for those listening, where the statements were produced.
Generated. And so the custodian can add a layer of security where you can have confidence that your advisor, if your advisor has malice intent, they are going to have to go through an incredible amount of hoops and you know, difficulty to try to do something nefarious if there's a custodian involved. I think it's probably a fair. It's not to say that it can't happen, but it's much, much more difficult. The consumer is much, much more protected, in our opinion, when there's a custodian involved versus when there's not.
Yep.
Right. Yep. So the podcast is called Give Me Some Truth, right? Let's kind of put it on the table a little bit. Schwab's a great custodian.
Yep.
Fidelity is a great custodian. Mm-hmm. Pershing does well as well. So again, if you're talking about how do we take this information from today and make it applicable and use it, we would speak highly of those firms. I think that's fair to say, right?
Yep.
You then also have other custodians that specialize in different things. Interactive Brokers, for example, is more of a specialty. Knock over my mic. Is more of a specialty.
I almost did.
I know I didn't though. Interactive Brokers is more of a specialty shop. They deal well with people that live internationally. They deal well in specialized areas, but they can be clunky. They can be hard to use. Mm-hmm. They can be expensive depending on kind of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But again, for the right person that does what they're looking to do, it can be a good fit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like their margin rates, I believe, are competitive. And like there's things for an active trader. I'll say this is not for your passive. I want to own the S&P 500 index fund.
Right.
You know, go elsewhere. If you're that person, I would say.
In a weird way, you can say they specialize in complexity, but they do it in a complex way. Right.
So the user interface is not great.
Exactly.
Right. I've used their trader workstation in a I don't work with our expat clients, so our expat advisors work with it more on the client side, but I've used it on my personal side years ago, actually, in their trader workstation. It took some getting used to.
Yeah.
It took a lot of getting used to.
Not intuitive.
And that's coming from somebody, speaking of myself, that's, you know, familiar with the industry.
Right.
So that says something, I think.
Right. So if you boil it down more to retail centric custodians, the Robin Hoods of the world, the kind of the old school like E-Trade, you know, that those platforms and a lot of those platforms still exist. Our kind of word to the wise there is just know what they do, fully try to understand the relationship as best you can, and see that it's going to do for you what you want to do, because it might specialize in an area that doesn't mean anything to you. Take a very real world today example, right? Crypto, right? You might find a custodian that does really well with crypto. But if you don't trade crypto and you don't care about crypto, that's a benefit you don't care about.
Right.
That might not be the best custodian for you then.
Right.
If you are seeking something that's a little bit more fastball down the middle.
Right, right. Right. And speaking of something like Robinhood, one thing that I would say is some of these companies were built around the idea of having it at your fingertips via phone on an app.
Sure.
Right. And sometimes they can be so appealing, and the user interface can be engaging and sexier, I'll say, than something like a Schwab or, you know, right, some of these others, right? Yeah. Looks cool. App's great. User interface sounds nice. But sometimes you need to look past that. You just need to look past that. And then this could be a whole nother kind of topic, but the concept of kind of gamification.
Yeah.
Right. So some of these things, I think it was Robinhood many years ago. Was it Robinhood that basically said, like, you get a free stock when you sign up?
And I believe it was. Yeah.
Or, right. I don't know if that was if you refer a friend or there was something about, like, you get a free stock.
You got a exactly. That was kind of their shtick. And
in any event, I don't know if there's anything wrong with that from the marketing perspective, right, but it really leaned into, you know, it can be a game of sorts. And then in COVID years, 2020, 2021, everyone had nothing better to do with their time, and they were sitting on their phones and at home and all this. I mean, you just look at the data of number of retail trades.
Right.
I mean, trading activity was insane during some of those times. And that was also like the GameStop and AMC, you know, when all that stuff was happening. And I say that because in some ways they were trying to make investing easy to access and usable, but there can be some unforeseen things that come from that. And there are some people that lost their shirts, know, during that time period, because there are some of the protective measures that are in between retail investor and, you know, ultimately trading, I'll say, weren't necessarily there during that period of time.
Yeah, and I even, again, this gets in the weeds a little bit, but there's what's called execution. And execution is really the idea that when we see a stock that's trading for a price or an ETF or whatever it might be, most people are probably not aware of the fact that there is a different price for buying it versus selling it, right? And that's called the spread, right? So if we just take a garden variety example, let's say that a stock is trading for $10.50 a share, okay? Well, we can look at the price of that stock and we can see that it's $10.50. But what most people don't realize is that if you're going to buy it or you're going to sell it, you're most likely not going to buy it or sell it for $10.50.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right? Yep. Might be $10.49, might be $10.51, okay? They're going to move that number around, and that's called the spread. And the tighter the spread, obviously, the better deal it is for you.
So SPY is a really tight spread because it's one of the most traded ETFs, S&P 500, vanilla.
Yes.
Right? Very tight spread. Like, you're going to get decent pricing.
Right. However, if you're buying things that are more unique, that are smaller in trading volume. They're not getting traded as much in the entire market and in a full day. It's called the volume of it. If you're getting a position, or if you like to dabble in areas that have thin volume, your spread is going to be bigger, your execution is not going to be as good, and you are going to pay more money to trade those positions as a result, yep. right? In and out, buying in, selling, you're going to get what's called haircutted, if you will, on both sides, and that can eat into your profits, or it can become expensive, and you might not even realize that that's happening.
Yeah, and again, that could be another whole podcast, right? On just bid-ask spread, how these places make money, best execution.
Right, because you might look at it and go, 1050 is perfect. I sell it at that. And you realize that it actually executed at 1045. Yeah. $10.45, not $10.50.
Yep. Yeah, because, you know, there is a requirement, I'll say, to have best execution for orders. And this got into another thing a few years back. This was actually Robinhood again. Sam, I don't want to pick on Robinhood too much, but, you know.
Go for it.
You don't get it. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, again, but this is something that was in the news,
real,
right?
Right?
I mean, they talk about. Stuff.
After what they did, take your shots. I mean, seriously.
It's, yeah. And this gets into the whole thing of paying for order flow and, places like Citadel, you may have heard in the news a few years ago. But essentially, they pay for order flow, so they route their trades to people that pay to play, essentially.
Yep.
Which can affect the client ultimately. Yes. And then there's the question of, hey, was that best execution standard lived up to or not? Again, that's actually, I think we did a podcast probably 2-3 years ago on that exact topic. So maybe in the meeting, or not in the meeting notes, in the podcast episode notes or something, maybe we can put a link or something.
Yeah.
If we dig up some of our old content there, because right. we've referenced some of these stories in the past and we can explore that a little further.
And I think the takeaway is, the goal of Mitch and I today is not to tell you, hey, this is a good custodian, this is bad, go with this one, don't go with this one. What we want to try to highlight here are the things that you'll want to research,
yep.
right? Because it is a little bit of, you know, kind of buyer beware, right? You got to kind of figure out on your own, what am I trying to accomplish? And then based on those criteria, you know, what are the two or three or four best custodians that I could work with and open an account with and then ultimately have a relationship with. And I think ultimately it comes down to things like trading costs. You know, through research, are you able to locate information that says that this custodian that you're looking at does execute trades yep. as efficiently as possible, right? Yep. And then if you want to get into things that are a little bit more outside the norm, like options trading, futures trading, things like that, crypto,
yeah.
Need to make sure that not only can your custodian do it, but you have to understand what is it costing me and what are the ins and outs of a transaction. And the other thing that I'll bring up as a result of that is if you land at a custodian and you decide, well, I'll just try it out for a month and if I don't like it, I'll move. Well, when you move your money, move your accounts, what can happen? You can get closeout fees, you can get transfer fees, you can get things like that.
Some require full liquidation of positions.
Some require full liquidation of positions.
That could be a big tax oops. Potentially.
Exactly. Because you might say, I just want to move my positions. I bought these shares and I just want to move them to a different custodian. Your custodian might force you to sell those positions.
Yep. Okay. Yep.
So again, just a more of a call out than anything on this podcast today, I think is really what we're trying to accomplish is just to say, if you're working with an advisor, if you're looking for an advisor, ask questions about the custodian. Don't be afraid to get into the weeds a little bit on that because, that is an important component to the relationship of, you know, that you have. It's not just you and the advisor, you and the company that the advisor works for. You also have indirectly a relationship with that custodian as well.
Yeah. And sometimes you need to look internally and figure out, like, what am I trying to accomplish with this? If you're just simply, you know, doing individual stock positions, then there's plenty of places that you're probably just looking at, you know, low cost essentially for that, right? If you just yep. want taxable brokerage account, stock positions, great, whatever. Look at low
just
cost.
A simple trading account is what you want.
Yeah, yep. And then you yep. want to make sure that, you know, on the tax side that the reporting is good and everything too. But if you're looking more so too of, well, no, I want to make sure that I'm, you know, if you're do it yourself or if you're an advisor, you do it through someone like Nate and I. But if you're doing it yourself too, you want to understand, like, well, you know, what kind of account types are supported too, and what kind of planning activities are supported.
Yep. Right.
Like even things like Roth conversions or something, right? Yes. Like what kind of capabilities, yep. like can you have the right accounts in place?
Right.
You know, are they going to get the right tax forms for you? Are they going to report basis if you do find yourself transferring assets out.
Yep.
I found that with Betterment a couple of years ago. I hope they've changed this since, but there was somebody that came to us that was transferring positions over from Betterment, and the positions transferred.
Sure, but not the cost basis.
But the cost basis did not.
Yeah.
So if you were not aware of that, and let's say you're doing it yourself, or the advisor you're working with wasn't, you know, aware of it or something, you could press sell on some of those, and you're taxed on the entire proceeds.
Sure.
Well, that didn't actually happen. You bought it for a price.
Right.
It's not like you were gifted these for zero and your basis is zero. No, you bought whatever it was for a price.
If you declare it as zero.
Yeah, and if you don't know what to look for on the tax forms and, you know, that's important. So Betterment was one of those things where a couple of years ago, you had to manually request the cost basis report or whatever they called it.
Sure.
And then get that PDF or Excel document then to your new custodian. Yep. And then it gets manually updated before you can really do any trading.
Yeah, I think this is an area of the world where the internet helps us, right? I mean, the internet can mislead us in many, many ways, obviously. But if you do some research and you look at reviews and you look at, you know, just kind of what other people are saying and some of the pitfalls like that other people have run into, I think you can pretty quickly, you can kind of decipher for yourself whether or not this is a company that is one that you want to work with. And the other thing that we'll close on is it's not uncommon for firms like ours to have relationships with multiple custodians. So that also gives you a little bit more choice if you're dealing with a financial advisory firm that has multiple relationships. Such that if you have a relationship with, or your accounts end up being at Schwab and you don't like that, but I want to still work with this advisor, is that an option? You know, for us it is, because we could move you to one of the other custodians that we have relationships with, but not all advisors have that flexibility either. They just have one custodian they work with. And so unfortunately, if that happens and you don't end up liking the custodian, you might not have a lot of choice in that situation. So, again, not the most entertaining topic in the world, but at the same time,
I was excited about it.
I mean, it's important, right? I mean,
I probably heard my voice even level up a couple of times. Yeah. I was so excited.
I mean,
especially talking about the peanut butter eggs, but you know,
you seem to like those.
They're pretty good. I'm looking forward to Easter.
I think that I think Easter. I'm going to say it this way. We're going to close it out. Easter is a sneaky, underappreciated food holiday.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that because it doesn't quite have the pure identity that some of the other ones do. But I think that, I think there's a pretty good choice out there when it comes to the springtime. I like it. I also like the fact that it means that, you know, we're almost done with winter. So,
yeah. Until last year when the first week of April, we got 12 inches of snow.
Something like that. Try not to remember that.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time today and joining Mitch and I on the topic of custodians. And we hope you join us again in another episode of Give Me Some Truth.
Walker Condon Financial Advisors is a registered investment advisor with the SEC. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training. The opinions expressed by the participants of this podcast are their own and do not reflect the opinions of Walker Condon Financial Advisors. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any individual. Viewers are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Past performance is not indicative of future performance.
You gotta leave your money behind you. Raise your hand to the sky. Ask the masses for silence.